from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. In 2006, writer Ellen Spragans asked well-known women ranging from Maya Angelou to Madeleine Albright to write down the advice they'd like to pass along to the young person they once were. The result was Spragans' book, What I Know Now, Letters to My Younger Self. Ever since, versions of that same exploration pop up in various publications. Sports stars like Aaron Rodgers telling his younger self to keep believing in his potential. Or Chef Alice Waters, whose advice turns out to be a lot more than just eat your vegetables. How about you? What have you learned in life so far that you wish you could pass on to your younger self? Take a moment, make a note, and call us. We're all ears after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Dear Dave, it's 1974, and you're about to go on the air for the first time. And there are a few things I'd like to tell you. So might begin a letter I'd write to my younger self. It's an interesting exercise. And it turns out, as I thought through that letter, that most of what I'd like to tell that dark-haired, sideburned broadcaster from 40 years ago has precious little to do with what it's like to be behind a microphone. What would you tell your younger self? What wisdom do you have now that you wish you could pass along to the person you were 10, 20, 30, or 40 years ago? That's our focus in this hour of Forum, the advice you'd like to pass along to your younger self. You can join us now and offer your letter to a younger self at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Or if you'd actually like to write it down, you can do that and email it to us at forum@kqed.org, or you can post your letter to your younger self on our Facebook page or on our website. Just a couple of examples I've found from others who have done this exercise. These were posted on the CBS site Note to Self. This is what Alice Waters had to say to her younger self. Don't ever lose that sense of independence or doubt. It's your greatest strength. Even if the way you're seeing things feels like the loneliest place in the world, trust it. The greatest thing any of us can do is to trust our instincts. And here's what Tyler Perry had to say about his younger self. He was addressing a picture of himself as a young boy, and he wrote, "In that picture, I see you trying to smile, but that smirk is all you could muster. I know that you're having a really hard time right now and that you spend a lot of time using your imagination, running free in the park, away from all the pain. In that reflection of your sad eyes, I see the hurt of watching your mother be belittled. I see the pain of your own beatings. And as I search your young face for any sign of myself, believe it or not, I'm able to smile because behind just that darkness, I see hope. And I know that even though you're fighting all of it right now, all that you're being and all that you're currently experiencing will shape who you will eventually become." What letter would you write to your younger self? It's a question we actually posed to a few members here of our KQED staff. So if you're curious to know what Rachel Miro, the host of KQED's The California Report, would say to her younger self, here's what it is.
I spent a lot of my youth and young adulthood playing to my strengths, like I have a facility with language, I should do something with writing, or red is one of my better colors to wear, working with, refining, perfecting what it is you do well. And then as years wore on, I started to see that that only takes you so far. At a certain point, you have to work with your weaknesses.
Rachel Miro, is that true for you if you were to go back in time and talk to your younger self? Would you tell that younger self to focus and build on the strengths that you had? Or would you say, you know, you should also think about your weaknesses and work on those? Or perhaps you would say that you have come to the point in life where you realize that your strengths, perhaps it's the use of language, is also your weakness. Perhaps you've come to an understanding that language, if it's your strength, might not be able to solve all your problems, that your greatest strength can also be your weakness. Let us know the kind of letter you would write to your younger self at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Here's some things that have already been posted on our Facebook page. Sharon writes in, listen to your parents. Don't sweat the small stuff. Life is for enjoying. Do unto others. Yuji writes, but the most important advice I would give to myself is to enjoy just being you. People want to grow up too fast, and when they do, all they want to do is be young again. Kate writes, you're not responsible for fixing everyone else's problem, and you do not deserve the guilt you feel for not being able to. Heather, be kind and generous to yourself and to others, always. Kindness is the key to opening doors to others. And Sandy, stop stressing out about not being perfect. Call people out on their tendency to want everyone to be perfect. Realize that beauty and true values can be very imperfect pursuits. Believe in yourself. Number of thoughts coming in already, and a number of people are joining us with their commentary on the letter that we would write to their younger selves. And one person who's going to join us now who has thought about this some is author Mary Roach. She is the author, among other things, of Gulp, Adventures on the Alimentary Canal, and Stiff, The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers. She's written about a lot of scientific topics, including perhaps the own science of how she became Mary Roach. Mary Roach, thanks for joining us.
Hey, well, thanks for having me.
So as you've thought about this question, that you're an enormously successful, best-selling author now of 6 different books, you didn't grow up, I don't think, thinking you would become a successful science writer. So as you go back and look at that younger you, what would you say?
I would give the young Mary Roach some relationship and dating advice, and I would do that by way of a quick story I'm going to share. And this is something that happened to me a couple of years ago. I was going to a party, and I was driving down. It's a very, very narrow street. And so a car coming out and a car going in pass each other very slowly. And I looked over, and in the next car was this man who I took to be my husband's old friend, Joe. And I looked at him, and I said, hey, you're leaving? Why are you leaving? The party's just starting. And he looked at me, and he was smiling, and we talked a little bit, and then I realized, it's not Joe. It's not Joe. But in that moment where I'd had this, you know, I'd looked at this man, this good-looking man, and I'd said, hey, why are you leaving the party? It turned out there were 2 parties on the end of this street. He was leaving the other party. It was in that moment I sort of saw how my whole youth could have been different. I realized that, like, the best pickup line in the world is just, hey, hi. And anyway, it was kind of, I wish I'd known then how it's so easy, Mary. Just say, hey, hello.
Reminds me of a time I had a 2-year-old in the front seat with me, and we stopped at a stoplight, and the 2-year-old ran down, wasn't my child, it's actually a neighbor's child, rolled down the window and just started chatting with the person in the car next to him. And I thought, boy, that is a great skill to have at the age of 2 and a half, to just say, hey, how are you?
Hey, hi. I know. Yeah. What else would I tell myself? Oh, another piece of advice I would give the young upstart Mary Roach, when you write that angry letter, it wouldn't have been an email back then, or you're ready to confront someone, give it 24 hours, because more than you could ever believe, it's probably just hormones. Also, wear earplugs when you're in a very, very loud place. Please wear earplugs. Carry earplugs with you. That's another thing I wish I had done when I was young. Sunscreen, that's another one.
The old Kurt Vonnegut line, or at least it's attributed to him, though I'm not sure he ever really said it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's those are the things that came to mind that I wish I... There's one other thing. Mary Roach, young Mary Roach, your dad was this amazing artist. He did these amazing caricatures, silk screens, posters, such a huge talent, and you never said anything to him. You never actually said, wow, that's really good. And so now he's gone. He died when I was 23. So now I have his art on the walls, and I don't have him to know that or to tell him that.
So is that the thing for you, Mary? I mean, it's remembering not only to just to say, hey, when the moment is there, but to give voice to something you might not later have the chance to say.
Yes. Yeah. I don't have a lot of regrets in life, but that is one.
Yep. Mary Roach, author of many books, including Stiff, The Curious Life of Human Cadavers, Gulp, Adventures on the Elementary Canal, and many others, and reminding us maybe your next book will just be, hey. Mary Roach, thanks very much for getting us started.
Thanks.
What other things do you wish you might have said? Are there regrets in that letter you'd write to your younger self, whether it's saying something perhaps to a parent or a grandparent or a friend in need? Is there something that you wish now that you could have done that you'd like to tell your younger self to make sure that they do? Let's hear what some of our listeners are starting to think about this question. Susan in San Jose joins us first. Susan, what would you say?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I would simply say to myself, have more confidence in yourself. My biggest regret is that I didn't go to medical school when I was younger, and it was simply because I didn't have the confidence that I could do it. And now, looking back, I know I could have done it and could have done it well. So I think young people... for whatever reason, just sometimes, you know, you quoted a number of people who said, you know, follow your strengths, but I didn't do that. I, you know, doubted my strengths, and so I didn't follow them, and I do regret that. I'm sorry I didn't.
What do you think, Susan, might have made a difference to you 30 years ago if someone had whispered in your ear? Can you go back to who you were at that time? Is there something that would have given you the confidence that you didn't have?
Yeah, I think I didn't have enough people around me telling me I could. I didn't get a lot of feedback from parents and family, really either positive or negative. So I formed, you know, these impressions in my own mind. And I think if I had, you know, cheerleaders saying, go for it, you can do it. And of course, times were very different then. Women didn't, you know, follow those kinds of dreams nearly as much as they did today, and they didn't have the opportunity to say, yes, I can be married and have a family and, you know, also be a doctor. It was, you know, sort of a career that I saw as being more or less all-consuming and didn't know if I would be able to really do it all. So I think... mainly having cheerleaders, people who encouraged me to do it, would have made a big difference.
Susan, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
It's an interesting point in thought. I often think about probably the greatest gift a parent can give a child is to just believe in them, and that faith, that sense of belief and confidence is imbued at an early age can make all the difference. Join us at 866-733-6786 if you'd like to share what letter you would write to your younger self. You can also email them to us at forum@kqed.org, or you can post your thoughts on our Facebook page or on our website as well. As I mentioned earlier, we asked a number of people here at KQED that question about the kind of thing that they would write to their younger selves. Here's what Scott Schaefer, the host of KQED's Newsroom and, of course, the California Report, here's what he would say to his younger self.
When I was younger and trying to decide what I wanted to do, I was very practical in choosing education that would lead to a job and a very practical career. And I realized afterwards that it's really not about that at all. It's about passion. It's about what really makes you excited and happy. And the other things will fall in place if you just follow your passion.
Scott Schaefer talking about what he would tell his younger self. Do you agree with that? Is that something you wish people had said to you, to follow your passion rather than to think, as we do so much now, it seems, younger people going to college, you got to get a degree that's going to lead to a job, and that passion really isn't enough? Where do you come down on that? Do you wish now, looking back, even if, let's say, you're only in your late 20s, do you wish someone had said to you, no, follow your passion? Or conversely, do you wish someone had said, hey, passion is fine, but what really counts is being able to make a living? What advice would you like to hand back to that 17-year-old who's thinking about what college they'd like to go to or what career they'd like to pursue? 866-733-6786 is our number. Email us at forum@kqed.org, or you can post your thoughts on our Facebook page or on our website. Here's a couple more coming in. Facebook comments. Susan has a 3-word letter that she would write to her younger self. Buy Google stock. Thanks, Susan. Sonia writes in, the plans you have in your head may not match the path you end up taking, but there are possibilities you never knew would be so fulfilling. Michael, choose a different major. Joe writes, find the guys who invent the internet or Facebook and dissuade them from that end. Oh, that's the other way around. And Christine writes, do all the things you're afraid to do. That's interesting. Would you have wanted someone to say to you, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to roll down the window and say, hey, as Mary Roach said, don't be afraid to do the kind of things you want to do. Tony writes in something similar. Don't be afraid to kiss the girl. Do your best. You can pursue philosophy and you can end up really happy. I actually like the first part best. Don't be afraid to kiss the girl. What sort of things were fearful to you? Do you wish that people could have said to you, or do you wish that you could go back in time and say to your younger self? Scott is next in Palo Alto. Or sorry, Scott, we'll get to you in just a moment. We are switching instead to Ben in San Carlos. Ben, go ahead.
Hi, this is Ben from San Carlos. And I would tell my younger self to take computer science classes in college. The future has turned out to be much more interdisciplinary, and technology touches almost everyone's life, no matter what their profession is or passion. And having that skill set, I think, is one of those universal things that kids in the future will need to have.
What do you do now, Ben?
I'm a chief operating officer at an education nonprofit.
So how do you come down then on that mix of passion versus practicality? It sounds like the nonprofit world and pursuing something in education is what is close to your heart. But in the meantime, you ought to make sure you got some skills that take you beyond that or that you can apply. I guess it's applying practicality to passion. Is that where you are?
Yeah, I guess everyone has a tool belt and everyone has their passion. And the idea is to really follow your passion and make the biggest difference. You need to have a pretty complete tool belt. And so just thinking about your younger years as a chance to build that toolkit while also doing the self-exploration to find your passion, I think that's key. I did a lot of the exploration side, but not as much as the tool building. And I think you can do both.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you're saying they can go hand in hand. It's not either or. You need passion in your heart, but a tool belt around your waist. How long did it take you to figure that out, Ben?
I'd say about a decade, from, 18 to 28. And what I would say, too, is the world is much more interdisciplinary, and the idea that a career is linear or life is linear, it's totally not the case anymore. And so the more people can have multiple passions, and the more skills that you have, the more flexibility you have at different stages in life to follow those multiple passions.
Ben, thank you. I think that's actually my fundamental problem with the 21st century. I'm a linear guy in a nonlinear world. Ben, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Scott in Palo Alto. Scott, go ahead.
Good morning. I think I would tell myself it's not so much what you know in life that determines your success, but rather who you know and how you know them. In other words, the quality of relationship or the depth of relationship. And I think what that does is it helps us to cultivate inquiry into other people's lives and then eventually back into our own lives. And regardless of what you do, how much money you make or whatever it is, it's always been based on the relationships that I've always been involved in that has determine my success, and I use that interchangeably with happiness. So that's what I tell myself.
So, Scott, when you say it's who you know, you're not talking necessarily just so much in terms of having the right connections. You're talking about...
Yeah. I think that that's a very good point. I think that that's our tendency is to say, well, you need to be connected. You need to be rubbing elbows with the right people to get your material success. I think that's fairly parochial understanding of success, no offense to anybody. But when you start to learn about how to inquire into other people's lives, it might be an attendant at a 7-Eleven that you just simply cultivate a deep relationship with, and you find out things about just the richness of life. Just by, it's really anybody you encounter. And everything else just kind of comes along and sweeps along with that. And just being interested in other people's lives makes you interested in life. Period. Does that make sense?
It does. Scott, thank you. Thanks for offering your letter to the younger Scott. I think it's such a useful point, really, and that not only does it matter who you know, but it matters to continue to show up for who you know. I don't know if it was Woody Allen, you know, the old business about half a life is showing up. I think I would amend that in my letter to my younger self to say to be sure to show up for the people you care about in their times of need, that it is who you know, but it's also in showing up for the people that you know. Matthew has some thoughts on the letter that he would write to his younger self. Matthew, you're on.
Hi. So I think following what's practical and following what your interests or passions are not necessarily mutually exclusive, but I think if you follow what is practical first, that should give you the financial independence to follow what your interests are. And I think that's something that people, at one point, that people miss out on, is that when you're financially independent, you have more freedom because you don't have the background, you know, the overhead to worry about. And, like, I'd like to echo a lot of what Ben said, and that, you know, that took me probably my 20s to figure out also, but...
It only took to your 20s?
Well, I mean, I'm 30 now, and I've, you know, looking at, you know, my 20s, I feel like that was kind of a meandering decade.
Matthew, you got a little time still, believe me. But thank you. Thanks. It's actually a really important point. When I was thinking about this exercise for myself, I grew up thinking that money really isn't what matters most. You need to focus on doing something that's useful to the world. I think what I would tell my younger self now would be, yes, indeed, focus on doing something that's useful in the world. But it's not a bad thing necessarily to make a little money and to have a little bit of independence later on in life. Thank you, Matthew. Thanks for offering your thoughts. We're going to have to take a short break. And when we continue, we're going to talk to Lyrics Born, the Japanese-American rapper who's going to tell us the kinds of things he would tell his younger self. We're going to hear also from my esteemed colleague, Michael Krasny. He has something interesting to say that he would say to the younger Michael Krasny. We've got lots of notes coming in from all kinds of our listeners, Tony and Rand and David and Alexandra and Lynn and Sage and Noah. We'll read as many of those as we can, as well as your comments as well. What are the kinds of things you would tell your younger self? What are some of the advice that you'd like to have that would have perhaps made a difference at a turning point in your life? When you go back and think about those turning points, what kind of guidance would you like to give that person as they're about to make, that younger you of yours, some fundamental choice in your life? We'd love to hear your thoughts on that. You can join us now at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Your letter to your younger self. Post them on our Facebook page as well, or email them to us at kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson. I'm my older self, and this is Forum on KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, the advice you'd like to give your younger self. If you could go back in time and meet the younger you, whether that younger you were 5 or 10, 15 or 20, what would you like to say to that person as they were moving ahead in the journey that would take them to being the person you are today? What advice would you like to give them that you know now that you didn't know then? Here's one of our listeners who writes, "To me, follow your passion is a pressuring imperative. Excuse me. I don't I didn't know what my passion was, and most of us really don't. Maybe humans weren't made to choose one single career track. Do you feel like all this talk about following your passion is too much, that it puts undue pressure and that it would have put undue pressure on your younger you? We'd love to hear your thoughts on that. You can join us again at 866-733-6786. We're joined now by Tsutomu Tamshimura, better known as Lyrics Born, the rapper, producer, and songwriter, author of the ebook Yes, Bay Area, which is a collection of his tweets. Lyrics Born, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So in 144 characters, what would you tweet back to your younger self?
Oh, you know, I would probably tell my younger self, I'm more so thinking about myself in my 20s, probably. I would say to not be afraid to lead. And also not to, if a situation doesn't feel right, don't stay in it, you know. Don't be afraid to move on, you know. I think in the past I probably was holding out a little too much hope that maybe things that didn't quite feel right would have turned around when there was, in hindsight, really no indication that they would have, you know. And I think I would have told that guy to don't be afraid to really, you know, step on out of that and show by example and just how to make a way.
Is that what was behind? Is that some of what are you reflecting on when you think back to, you used to call yourself Asia Born and focus more on your Japanese American heritage, and now it's you call yourself Lyrics Born. Is that part of what you're saying in that? That's part of what was in play there, to not be afraid to step away and not be bound by sort of some sort of cultural should.
Maybe partially. I think it, you know, in those times, when I say, you know, when I would have advised myself not to be afraid to lead, I mean, there was a time when I would take a look around and I was the only guy out there that did what I did, that looked like me, that had a name that ended in a vowel that was hard to pronounce, you know. And, you know, I was sort of reluctantly forced to speak for a lot of people and sort of be that guy, you know, and it wasn't something that I was totally comfortable with because as far as I was concerned, I just wanted to be recognized for the actual music that I was making and the content that was there. But, you know, obviously I'm very proud of who I am and where I've come from and, you know, my background and so forth. But I think that, you know, I think that so many times I probably, you know, the only job I've ever had has been in the music business, and there is no roadmap. I mean, there is no, you know, you can't take a course on how to have a successful career in the music biz, you know.
What gave you, do you have a sense of what gave you the courage to do that? You know, we've heard from a number of people talking about following your passion, or people saying,
right,
well, you know, following your passion is okay, but you need to make sure you take computer science along the way. I mean, anyone who wants to pursue the arts, be that music or theater, has to really have a lot of guts. It takes a lot of courage to do that. And the odds are it's not going to work out, right? So what was that in you, do you think? Or did someone whisper in your ear that made the difference to have the guts to do what you're doing?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think I was very fortunate that, I mean, I knew what I wanted to do from the time I was 3-4 years old, I knew I wanted to be an artist, but it wasn't until I heard hip hop that I knew what kind of artist that I wanted to be. And I was just fortunate enough that my father was a writer and my mother went along for the ride, and, you know, as I developed and got older, I mean, I had a really great support group of peers and friends, and so I was very fortunate in that way. I think probably if I'd not had that kind of support in such an unconventional field, I probably would have chosen a different path. You know?
It's interesting to think about that if you if your passion is the arts, you really need people to believe in you.
I think you need people to believe in you, period, no matter what your passion is. You know, because I think it's like you said in the little bit before I came on, it's, you know, a lot of people go through their lives not discovering what their passion is. And so it's kind of hard to advise somebody from that position, you know. And I think that I'm fortunate enough that, you know, maybe some of the people in my family and friends, you know, ignored their better judgment and did encourage me to choose such an unconventional path.
Tom Shimura, Lyrics Born. Thank you.
Thank you.
866-733-6786 is our number if you'd like to share with us, and we would like you to, the kind of letter you would write to your younger self. Rachel in San Francisco. Go ahead.
Hi, Dave.
Yep, you are on.
Can you hear
on.
Me? Okay. I was getting anxious when this happens. Dave, I would say the cool kids have no clue what's going on. Don't idolize the cool kids. They look really pretty. They have the right brands. Oh, I hope some young people are listening. The cool kids are going to be a mess later on. Be vulnerable. Old people, I mean really old, the nasty, drooly kinds, they're so amazing. And it might sound really silly and nerdy, but the old people have something special for you. The older people have something special. The fads will die away, but I'm just so curious about vulnerability. Be sensitive. Sensitivity is shamed and ridiculed. Be sensitive, be vulnerable, and be real. It's so beautiful. I hope that didn't sound too crazy.
No. And when did that come to you? And what was it about your younger self that didn't know that you wish
kids
had?
Kids are just beastly. And I was told I was sensitive every day and all kinds of ridicule, including my teachers. So we're told to shut up certain parts of ourselves. And so as we get older, it's the greatest blessing to be sensitive. We understand people better. We have compassion. I'm not in the world of technology. That's not a world that's interesting to me whatsoever, although it's a world I need to use for my work, some of my work. So the realness of humans, that vulnerability, that messy stuff, we only start to get to like that when we're older, if we're lucky, I think.
Rachel, thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Maxine in Sacramento is up next with her letter to her younger self. Maxine.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I would encourage people who have a passion but who can't make it in the world financially with that passion, still not to give up the passion. It shouldn't be an excuse for not doing what you love. You just may have to do it after work or on weekends, and you still may have to pay the rent. But do what you have to do, but don't ever give up what you love, even if you can't financially survive on it.
And is it also then a question, what was it for you, Maxine? Have you kept a passion alive that you couldn't make go as a career?
Actually, my passion has evolved. And so I would say now in my 60s, it's taken me a while to figure all this out. But I know that it doesn't have to be a 9-to-5 job and then be miserable in it and say, oh, I never could do what I wanted to do. You still can do what you want to do. If you're in theater, do community theater after work and on weekends, even if you can't make a living doing it. Just don't give it up.
It's astonishing, as someone also in my 60s, what we still don't know in the 60s, right, Maxine? It's astonishing that you still haven't figured it out. And I guess that's part of what I would say to my younger self. You know what? You can't actually figure everything out. Not all problems are necessarily solvable.
No, and it's exciting. Right before I get really old, it's exciting knowing that I can still learn, I can still develop, I can still be surprised. And I just think that that's something that I never even considered.
Maxine, right?
So
thank you.
Don't give it up.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay.
Next to Rita in San Jose. Rita, or rather, sorry, we skipped you, Rita, but we will come back, I promise. Gail in Petaluma is actually on now. Gail, go ahead.
Hi. Loving the show. I would say patience. I would tell myself to be patient. I got married very young and had two kids right away. kind of felt trapped, although I have no regrets. I would just tell myself to be patient. Marriage and children can come after you travel and finish school and figure out a few things. But like the previous caller, Maxine, I'm older. I'm in my 60s, and I still want to do more things. So patience is really a virtue, which I've struggled with all of my life.
Gail, thank you. Thanks for offering that. What other words like patience occur to you when you think back about something that you'd like to tell to your younger self? Gail talks about patience. What others occur to you? Kindness, perhaps, honesty, working hard. What are the things that you'd like to say to your younger self that are summed up by a single word, like kindness, like patience? Let us know at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Here's a letter that Oprah wrote to her early self. She wrote, relax, relax. It's going to be okay, girl. And now let's hear from one of KQED's most familiar voices, perhaps our most familiar voice. What would Michael Krasny say to his younger self?
There's a lot to be said for also relaxing and enjoying more the comforts and the luxury that one has with one's loved ones and one's friends, and taking time to really find activities that can be stimulating and that can be exciting and that can also be simply of ease.
Of ease. Relax. Who knew that Michael Krasny and Oprah would have the same advice? Relax. 866-733-6786 if you'd like to join our conversation and tell us the letter that you'd write to your younger self. Jonathan writes, wish I would have gone on a walkabout to gain personal vision. Rami writes, do the right thing at the right time, from writing a thank you note to having children. Great point, Rami. Write that thank you note. I agree. Mari writes, in my mid-40s, one of my major regrets is the lost opportunity for one last visit with friends and family who have died. So I would say don't put off visiting, calling, and writing friends and family who are elderly or infirm, because you never know how many chances you'll get. Thank you, Mari, for sharing that. We're joined now by Norman Fisher, former abbot with the San Francisco Zen Center and the founder and spiritual director of the Everyday Zen Foundation. His newest book is Training in Compassion, Zen Teachings on the Practice of Lojong. He's also a well-known poet. Norman Fisher, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Dave. It's nice to be here.
It's nice to hear your voice on our program. What that last person wrote about making sure you say what you need to say to not put off visiting is, I expect, the kind of thing that might strike a chord with you. But tell us, what would you say to your younger self?
Well, I would tell my younger self three things. First of all, pay a lot more attention to your friends, because probably your whole life through, these are going to be people that you'll know and who are going to shape who you are. And when you get older, you're really going to appreciate them. So be careful with how you treat them now and treat them as precious, precious people in your life. The second thing I would tell myself, my younger self, is get your head out of the clouds and learn how to cook, clean, and take care of the garden. Because these are basic things you're going to be doing your whole life, and if you don't focus on them, make them into arts and make them into enjoyments, you're going to be missing out on something. And they'll just be like annoyances to you if you don't really pay attention to them. And the third thing I would tell my younger self, because when I was younger, I had a lot of thoughts about a lot of things, and those thoughts didn't necessarily serve me that well. I would tell my younger self, don't worry so much about all the things you're thinking. Enjoy your thinking, but don't believe it all, and don't take it all that seriously. Those are the things that I would tell my younger self, and I'd probably be a lot better off if I had been able to read that letter and believe it when I was younger.
I'm curious about the last one in particular, Norman, about in a sense, don't think so much, or don't worry so much about your thinking. When I think of your practice as an abbot and as someone who reflects and meditates on the meaning of things. What have you learned about that? That's not about thinking so much.
Well, I guess one way to look at it is I've learned a different way of thinking. Instead of getting wrapped up in my thoughts and perseverating and going on and, you know, full of contradictions and worries and fretting, I've learned to just appreciate my thinking as it comes and goes. And with a point of view on life, I can discriminate between here's a thought that makes sense and can be beneficial, and here's another thought that's just coming from my confusion, so I don't really need to go that way. And I think a lot of our thinking comes from our, you know, confusion and our need to be right, our need to defend ourselves, our need to be important. So a lot of our thinking is useless, but so obviously the human thought is a fantastic thing, you know. So to be able to tell the difference between a thought that comes that is really useful and really noble and worthwhile and a thought that's coming from our confusion, to tell the difference between those two is hard to do. And a lot of what you need to do in order to accomplish that is to know how to, just like Michael and Oprah were saying, to learn how to relax around your thought and not believe every single thought and not be pushed around by every single thought. Meditation certainly has helped me learn that style of thinking, that's for sure.
One last thought, a question I'd love to get your perspective on is, you know, so many people have written in about the importance of listening to your passion or following your instincts. What do you think about that, and how do you discern the truth of an instinct? Because lots of people might go back and say, boy, you know, that instinct I had to do that, man, was that a big mistake.
Right. Well, right. It's a little bit like what I just said about thinking. You have to learn how to discriminate between, because obviously human beings are magnificent, wonderful, and very bright, and at the same time, destructive, confused, and nasty, right? So that's the trouble, and every one of us has both sides of that, right? So when we talk about our instincts and our passions, where is the passion coming from? Where is the instinct coming from? We have instincts to do wonderful and good things, and the opposite. So to be able to just be quiet long enough and to look at what those passions and instincts are and to be able to discriminate between those passions and instincts that serve us and others and those passions and instincts that do the opposite, that's the important thing. And how do you do that? Well, I think trial and error. You know, you begin to notice, oh, I followed that passion and look where it got me. Ouch.
Right.
Oh, I followed this one and this was better. Well, what was the difference? How did that feel in one way or the other? And it's not so easy to make that distinction, but I think one learns it through bitter experience over time.
Noren Fisher, the former abbot with the San Francisco Zen Center, his newest book, Training in Compassion, Zen Teachings on the Practice of Lojong. Norman, thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Nice program.
Pleasure to have you on our show. You know, it's a funny thing. I think about this sometimes about how you sort of really know things. And one thing I thought about when I was sort of jotting notes to my younger self was that if you have to try to convince yourself of something, it probably means you shouldn't do it. And conversely, that if a door opens and you feel you ought to walk through it, then you probably should. But it's an interesting thing to try to think about the truth of those, I think, when they are an instinct that ought be followed and when it's something that you're just trying to convince yourself of. 866-733-6786, letters to your younger self. Back to our listeners. Rita. Go ahead, Rita in San Jose.
Yes, hi, good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
I grew up in India, and I'm a first-generation U.S. immigrant, and I spent a lot of my 20s sort of, you know, conforming, being a good girl, being a good, you know, a graduate student, being a good employee, just working hard to please my bosses, and I think taking a less risky path and constantly plagued by analysis paralysis. So I would write to my 22 or whatever-year-old self, I'd say don't be so self-conscious and cautious. You know, take some risks. Proceed with abandon. You know, things are not as bad as you think they're going to be. The solutions will reveal themselves.
And do you think, Rita, that what do you think would have persuaded that 22-year-old you to do that?
That's a good question, because I was on the part, the linear part, as you discussed earlier, you know, with my graduate scholarship and my H1 and, you know, the whole thing. And it would have been really difficult to dissuade me from taking the cautious path, because as a first-generation immigrant, you can't take too many risks and risk losing your job, which basically predicates your being here, essentially. So it's hard.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. I wish I had written that to myself, so I wouldn't, you know, have stewed in misery and spent too much time overthinking things. And anyway,
well, you're writing it now, so go take a risk.
I will. Thank you.
Thanks, Rita. Thank you very much. Helen in San Jose is next. Helen, you're on.
Hi. What I initially thought I would say to my younger self was, don't marry that man. And my passion turned out to be hormones. But
so you did marry that man.
I did marry that man. And I had three children. And then that was my second thought. If I hadn't married that man, I wouldn't have had those three children.
Right.
And so I guess in the final analysis, it all worked out, and I eventually went back to school. And I'm 69 years old now, and I just finished my AA in music at De Anza College in Cupertino.
Good for you. Good for
you. And I plan to go on to a four-year university and finish up my bachelor's.
Helen, thank you. Godspeed. Thank you. Thanks for joining our program today. Some other comments coming in from our other listeners. Ruth writes, I wish I had encouragers that were specific, so I wouldn't have so easily believed everyone who told me that I was ugly. People today are stunned that all my life I believed I was not beautiful, and I truly am. Ben writes, stand up for yourself. You're the only one who will. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. Daria writes, don't listen to your parents. I beg your pardon. All their good intentions may not leave you happy. Trust your instinct. It's okay to make mistakes. You're not going to die from them. You'll just learn a few things. It'll be okay. Patrice, never trust a man with a handlebar mustache or a guy named Rex. Boy, I bet there's a lot there, Patrice. Bill writes, the main lesson I learned over some 70 years is that everything is a trade-off. There are no 100% win situations. And Renee adds, you can't force love. If you do, you'll be disappointed that your passion isn't equally shared. 2, marriage and family can wait. Enjoy your independent, single, young adulthood. And 3, you don't need someone to complete you. You're an amazing young person in your own right. Glenn Washington is on the line with us. He is the person behind the public radio program Snap Judgment, hosts and executive produces that show, which airs here on KQED 11 o'clock on Saturday nights. Glenn, how are you?
Fantastic. How are you?
I'm great. Now, you have a law degree, you were a diplomat, you studied in Japan, and you somehow wound up in public radio. So what would you tell the younger you? Would it be to never turn on the radio, or would it be to turn it on loud?
it would be to get away from maybe the radio, from everything for a while. The biggest thing, if I was to talk to younger Glenn, would be to hit the road, to travel. Every time you go to a new country where maybe you don't speak the language, you don't know what's up, it's like you have to start over at ground zero. You have to start almost as if you're a baby, to learn how to shop again, to learn how to go navigate, to learn how to have friends and what that means. And that process is so important, and it's something that I feed off of every day now that I'm older and not doing that anymore. There's never been a time when I wished, I wish I hadn't gone that road, or I wish I hadn't met that person, I hadn't gone to that lady's house for dinner. That's never, ever happened to me, and I would say take every chance to travel that you can.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Glenn. I wish we could keep you on for longer, but we're just about out of time, and I want to hear from a few other listeners. But say yes every time the passport beckons. Glenn Washington, thank you. Thanks so much. Let's hear from a couple of other individuals. Darshana is next in San Jose. Darshana, go ahead. Real briefly, if you would.
Yeah, I would tell my younger self that there are all these decisions, which college you will choose, which major you will choose. All these decisions are not that important. But the most significant decision is which partner you will choose, and look for kindness in that individual, because that has so many implications for your life, especially as a young girl, for the children that you may have, and so on.
Darshana, thank you. Thanks so much. I'm just going to read a few others that have come in. So many. We're flooded with so many people here, and I just want to read a few other comments to younger self. Craig, you know you're over the hill when your mind makes you a promise that your body can't do. Michael writes, don't watch television, except for baseball games. I agree with that, Michael. Hillary, I wish I could tell my younger self to turn off the television and learn to cook. David, resist the urge to go to law school. I'm just going to leave it at that. Rand, there's much I would tell that idiot kid of 40 years ago, but number one would be don't stride so heedlessly through college. Take the path of least resistance, ignoring the riches strewn around your feet. I wonder if that's my pal, Rand. Faye writes, why be nervous at party? They're just kids. And Sean writes, I have to agree with the caller about not listening to the cool kids. I was a bit of an outcast, wanted to be accepted, but shortly after high school, I realized the cool kids had no idea. 10 years later, I've moved across the country and I've had amazing life experiences. My career has taken off. I look at the cool kids and they're still doing the same thing as they did 10 years back. They're just not me. And so there never was any point in trying to be like them. You have to be like you. Thank you, Sean. Thanks to all of you for your letters to your younger self. We're going to collect these. I don't know what we'll do with them, but we're glad you took the time to write them. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.